My name is Adam Levine.
Yo, this your man, Kirk Franklin.
Hello, everyone. I'm Erica Campbell.
From London, England and Washington, D.C., you are tuned in to Conversations with Allison J. The Journey to Here, brought to you by Ethel May Books. This is Conversations with Allison J. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Conversations with Allison J., The Journey to Here. Today, as always, we have another captivating and thought-provoking topic and guest. Here's your host, Allison J.
Welcome to another episode of Conversations with Allison J., The Journey to Here. I'm your host, Allison J. Today, I'm delighted to welcome our guest all the way from Zimbabwe, Sukumbo Dube. He is a writer, pastor, healthcare chaplain, a director of the West Zimbabwe Conference Stewardship Ministries with an interest in psychotherapy, touching lives, and is ministry to the childless not by choice. He also runs Shunem Care, a ministry to the involuntary childless born out of his personal pain, having seen his wife go through a series of surgeries, attempting to have their own baby, wiping her tears as she battled with the anguish that comes from miscarriage, being stigmatized, talked about, badmouthed, and the pressure of losing the parental role moved Sukumbo to pick the wound in his own marriage to be the source of providing the much needed care to those he calls his childless tribe. At Shunem Care, men and women come together from different faiths, people who share their experiences of being childless. They get inspiration from what happened in Shunem, a small town where a childless couple who cared for the prophet Elijah lived. This can be found in 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 8 through 37. Though in pain, they were hopeful that what the couple in Shunem got, they too will get. The belief of Shunem Care is that while we are childless, we are not fruitless. We are complete human beings. We believe that childlessness is not an incapacitation. Their mantra is caring for each other. Sukumbo. Thank you for joining us here on Conversations with Allison J. It is a pleasure and an honor to have you. And one of the reasons that I wanted to so desperately speak with you is there's so many topics in this world that affect men that are not spoken about. Men are not given the voice, I firmly believe, to really express and share some of the deep-rooted things that do affect them in life. And there are many men that are childless, not by choice. However, when you think of that, most people's minds go automatically to a woman can't have, or it's that on the woman. But I wanted to hear from you, someone who is in a marriage and you are childless, not by choice. So if you could tell us about your experience and your journey.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Allison, for inviting me to this very important conversation. To me, it is a dear conversation because it is something about me that cannot be really shared in public because of the shame and the pain and the stigma that is attached to it. Being an African, I'm now married for this is our 11th year. So talking about childlessness is something that I call righteous rebellion. I call it righteous rebellion because I am cutting across the religious thoughts about childlessness because somebody who is not childless, I am presumed to be a person who is cursed by the God that he claims to be a minister for. And secondly, I'm cutting across cultural issues because in a cultural setting, men cannot talk about infertility, men cannot talk about such things. It's uncalled for. Why are you doing that kind of thing? So here I come with righteous rebellion talking about infertility. Mm-hmm. And that is my joy to actually talk about this. And this is, you can say, why do you say joy to talk about something that really demeans your manhood, demeans the real essence of man? Because right here where am I, my culture says for a man to be a man, mm-hmm. he must be, and more so, he must have sons. But here you are bragging about something that is like that. Yeah.
And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because a lot of people wouldn't understand the cultural aspects of that pressure, because I was speaking to Stephanie last week, and it's amazing sometimes when you look at the pressures put on people to have children. Nobody asks any questions. It's just automatically assumed, and that's what you're supposed to do. And for so many people that biologically cannot have their own children, all of those people putting the pressure on them, they have no idea of the hurt and the damage that they are doing. Because again, in certain cultures, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to get married, have children, and like you were saying, being a minister, because the Bible says be fruitful and multiply, right? So a lot of people are coming at you like that. Well, you're supposed to do this. This is what you are supposed to do. But again, as you were saying, as an African man, you're not supposed to talk about these things. You're just supposed to talk about all the man stuff, the working and the ministry and providing. But you're not supposed to talk about things that affect you and touch you deeply and personally. And this is where you're making those changes.
Yeah. Because if I am to be a real man, and quotes, I mean, if I'm a real man, issues of productivity. When we're talking about productivity, we're not only talking about bringing things into existence, like maybe building a house and whatever, or those things. Whilst those things are important, productivity also, from this cultural perspective, productivity also has to do with how many children have you brought. And so that really makes it a bit difficult to talk about the childlessness in this kind of a situation.
And I'm just so grateful that you have the courage to speak about it, because at first, did you find it easy to speak about, or was it something that you really had to work on yourself in order to do? Did you have to come to terms with it?
Beautiful. That's a very beautiful question. This has been a journey. I mean, acceptance is not, for me, it's not a place. It's not a destination. There's nothing like a destination. I mean, it is a journey. And so for me, beginning to speak about this has been a journey. Mm-hmm. When my wife had a third surgery, it was a very difficult one, because I almost lost her.
Okay.
Having gotten to that, when she was wheeled out of the theater, I thought to myself, what could have happened? I could have lost her. Mm-hmm. So since I have her, why should I continue in this kind of faith, thinking that, yes, maybe let the child come. I may continue with this series of surgeries that are taking place. Because when she was there in the surgery, this is what happened. As they were lifting the myometrial masses from the uterus, the I don't know what vein actually broke, and like a ruptured water line, the blood gushed out, and it was terrible. And I was asked, commanded to look for blood so that that blood would be transfused. Mm-hmm. It was a very difficult moment. The surgery lasted for a long time. And as I was asking what is really happening, I mean, they didn't tell me at that time that this is happening, but I sensed that there is a problem. So when she was wheeled, the doctor then set me down and began to tell me the process and what actually happened. Mm-hmm. Then I said to myself, I think I've got to change my perspective and how I look at this thing.
Mm-hmm, of course.
So I was doing my Master of Chaplaincy and Healthcare Chaplaincy. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I had chosen a different topic altogether for my thesis. But then I said, no. I think I have to research about something that really makes sense, mm-hmm. that impacts me, that talks to me. And my topic was good, but then I then decided to research on the issues of involuntary childlessness and how to provide therapy to those who are in this kind of a situation and to try and understand what they are going through. In that process, that is when I decided to come out and really talk about this. If I am to help people who are in this situation, I must talk about this. So this is what really happened.
Wow. So my question to you is, seeing your wife going through that, and it's just like, how did that impact you to think, my goodness, it's like my wife is literally dying to have a baby? Mm. What did it draw you and her closer together?
Yeah. So this is actually what was... It's like you're mirroring my mind. this is what was going on in my mind to say, should I lose my wife in an attempt to have a baby? I say, no. She is more important. Her life is more important than having this baby. After all, this is a gift. Should we die so that you can get a gift? From a religious perspective, from my faith persuasion, I would say to myself, children are a gift from the Lord. So should I really die in order to get a child? Should she really die in order to get a child? To get that gift, if the giver of the gift is not giving, should death come into the picture so that the giver of the gifts can actually give? That actually drew me closer to her. And I committed myself to writing a new narrative that says marriage is complete even if it doesn't have children.
And that is a message so many people need to take away, because the pressure that people put on themselves and the pressure that they put within their marriages as well, when they're trying so hard and so desperately, because we've seen and heard stories of people where marriages didn't survive the pressure or the resentment because one partner couldn't, or the pressure that they were putting on each other to be able to do that. And I was listening to someone speak the other day, and they were going through the fertility treatments and all those kinds of things. And they were saying that it pretty much almost drove them apart because everything had to be on a schedule. Everything was so regimented. And then they were, when they were being intimate, it wasn't because of pleasure, husband and wife coming together. It was because, okay, this is the time we need to do this because this is the schedule that we need to follow. So for you to say that and come to that, to say, actually, no, my relationship with my wife is key. It's vital. And like you said, if you were to lose your wife to have a child, what then? You know, what then? And the reason that I asked that question is because of my own journey. I came to that realization about myself because I was so ill, I had to have a couple of blood transfusions. So I had one the May, then the following March, I was sent to have another one. And just my health, and it, because when I went to have the first blood transfusion, my blood count was so low that the nurse that was hooking up the IV said to me, I've only ever seen these numbers in a textbook. She said, she said, by right, you are supposed to be unconscious. You're supposed to be in a coma, hooked up to at least four different machines about to go into organ failure. Mm-hmm. She said to me, I don't know how you even walked in here, is what a nurse said to me. And then, so I still was trying different things, trying different therapies. And then 10 months later, I'm sent to have another blood transfusion. And it was at that point, and the experience of having a blood transfusion, and that you have those, I can't remember what they call them, the iron infusions as well, and all of those, just the experience and what it did to me physically and actually what it was doing to me mentally made me actually stop and think, Alison, you're literally dying to have a child. And I came, that's what hit me, that I thought to myself, what am I doing? Because even the doctors said, because I have suffered, I have experienced miscarriages. Mm-hmm. And the doctor said to me, it could be fatal for me to carry a child, but I was still trying. Was still putting my life at risk, still putting my health at risk, still putting so many things at risk, but I was still trying. And so that's why I'm able to ask that particular question, because the reality of it came to me. I mean, this happened in 2017 is when the reality of it happened for me. So we're talking 3.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, literally, what am I doing? Am I really prepared to put my life at risk to fulfill? Yes, it was a dream and a hope of mine to have a child. So I can understand you saying that, but it's refreshing to hear a man saying that about he thought of his wife's health, his wife's well-being, and not just the desire to be a father. But I wanted to ask you as well, being a minister, and as we mentioned, the Bible says, be fruitful and multiply, and you've got to just go out there. And so did this cause you to question God? Did this challenge your faith at all?
Beautiful question. It did. And it does. There are moments when children, in my faith tradition, mm-hmm. when children are born, there is a time when they are brought to the church and the pastor pronounces a blessing. So we call that child dedication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So that time has never been easy for me.
Mm. As a minister, because you dedicate the babies, right?
I am responsible for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
For doing that. So each time, as I am doing that, there's a bell that rings. And I try to suppress it, mm-hmm. try to close it, but the bell continues to ring. You are not a dead. You are not a dead. You are not a dead. But I'm your minister, Lord. I'm your minister, Lord. I am your minister. Why? You are not a dead. You are not a dead. So each time, this is one of the services that really is a trigger for me. Mm-hmm. But I have to do it. So as a minister, I have moments when I really am in that audience chamber with God.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, battling with him and asking him questions. He's not my equal. He is high, there, exalted, and powerful, and he is mighty. And I'm just but a child, but I still have those questions. I still have those questions. So finally, I come to a point where I say, Lord, if this is going to be it, allow me to accept the thorn in the flesh and live. And so, in dealing with the anger that I have against God, I have come to say, Lord, I am a broken reed, but use me like that. So I have adopted the classical image of pastoral care, that is the wounded healer classical image, to say, I go out there with my wounds, and with these wounds, I would love to help someone who is going through my pain or similar pain or whatever challenge that is. So I'm able to say, when somebody is seated and saying, I am going through a difficult time, I'm angry at God, it's easier for me to say, My friend, I understand you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I hear what I understand you, because I am going through that. I have moments when I have this anger. So you are normal. You are a normal human being. It's normal. Don't even regret why you are angry at God. Don't even regret, because I understand this.
Mm-hmm.
Were I not in that position, maybe I was not going to understand that. I don't know. So I say to myself, thank you, Lord, for allowing me to pass through this, because it helps me to understand my members who are passing through different problems.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you are so honest and transparent about being angry with God. And I'm glad, and I like the fact that you said you were and you still are, because some people think that it's just something you can just get over just like that. But how can you when you have constant reminders?
Yeah. It see, people will say, get over it. Like it's something that you can wake up and then you are, it's like you get into a sleep and then you wake up and then you are. Yeah, okay, just like
yeah.
that.
Yes, it's like
it's not a magic pill. I mean, saying get over it is actually saying to me, when somebody says get over it, is this person is saying this whatever you're going through is insignificant. You can just get over it.
Yes.
Get over it. Why are you bothering yourself with this kind of a thing? But it is a journey.
Yeah.
And an arduous journey, so to speak. It is like somebody actually said, where the mountain smooth, who would get to the top? So I thank God for the rough pitches of the mountain, because I am able to climb using these very rough pitches of the mountain. If it was smooth,
Lie down.
It was going to be tough, yeah.
Yeah, and if it was smooth, you couldn't, how could you get to the top? Because there's nothing for you to grip onto to pull yourself up, is there? So yes, I like that. I really like that. Because, you know, the reason that I really, another reason I'm really grateful that you as a minister are being so honest and transparent, because I think so many times people feel like, because I know growing up in, my parents are from Jamaica. So okay. I, like growing up in that kind of, I want to say like really strict, super religious denomination. It's one of those things where you're told you should never question God. You shouldn't be angry with God. But the truth is we are people. God made us. And God is not intimidated by our being angry at him. that doesn't intimidate God. And in fact, as humble children, I think we should be transparent with God because he already knows anyway. It's not like he doesn't know. So and in people trying to suppress that, I find it's something that stifles spiritual growth. And it stifles your emotional and mental growth as well. What do you think about that?
Not only the empathy may not be there. Besides the spiritual growth, besides actually being emotionally wounded, it eats out empathy because you expose yourself to a situation, a world that is non-existent. And when somebody who is coming genuine, honest, and they are passing through a rough page, you can't walk in their shoes. You can't understand them because you are having this facade that is blocking your way. You cannot really see it clearly. So this openness, honesty, and being open with God, telling him how you feel, really does something like medicine in me, because this is a personal thing. I mean, if I don't tell him that I'm angry, who will I tell that I am angry? I mean, you see, if I have offended you, Alison, if you have offended me, so to speak, if you have offended me and then I don't tell you that you have offended me, who suffers? It's me.
Yeah. Because you can start to be resentful towards me, and I don't even know why.
Yeah, I don't even know.
What did I do?
So for me, opening up with God and expressing my feelings of anger really helped me, because I am releasing that I don't want the pressure to continue piling in me.
Right.
I want this pressure to come out, and as it comes out, it becomes therapeutic to me to say, I am angry at you. I am angry at God. I know I shouldn't, because I'm a child, but I'm angry at you. So that really helps. That really helps. It's like forgiveness. I mean, if I'm forgiving somebody that has offended me, I am the one who is liberated.
Yes. Yeah.
Than the person that is supposed to be forgiven.
And that is key, what you're saying, people internalizing and it's suppressing that, because that's not healthy. That's just not healthy. And people like yourself being available, sharing and being so honest and open, because people think because you're a man of God, these things are not supposed to bother you. You're just supposed to accept it. It's God's will and that's it. When the reality is, before you were a man of God, you are a man. With feelings and emotions just like every other man out there. So of course, things are also going to affect you, but because you are a man of God, you then have that where you can go to the Lord and say, okay, look, why? Because people say we shouldn't question, but if you don't ask questions, you don't get answers.
True.
It really is as simple as that. If you don't ask, and for you, it would appear as though you have been able to channel what you have been going through and what you've seen your wife go through to use your pain for purpose. And because one of the things I wanted to ask is, you're at a place now where you and your wife, you've looked at it and you've thought, okay, this is it. I'm not going to lose my wife trying to have a child. But in the early days, in the beginning, did that affect your relationship with your wife? Did it affect your marriage?
Okay. Thank you. Beautiful question. I've always loved my wife from the very beginning. Uh-huh. From the very beginning. But I think this, instead of tearing me apart, instead of tearing the marriage, tell you what, it actually made it even stronger.
Wow.
Because I don't know why I don't have answers. Why? I mean, but what I know is, if I had children, maybe I wouldn't be this intimate with her. I wouldn't be this close to her.
Okay.
Because personally, I'm a lover of children. I love children a lot. I love them. That's one thing. Maybe that I really love them. I do write children's songs. I do ministry to children at times when I am free on spare time. I just go do children's ministries. Even before I got married, I just love children. Right. So this, having children before, not having children before, I mean, not having children in my marriage didn't really pull my marriage apart as it was supposed to.
Or, and not as it was supposed to, or as we have seen happen.
Yes, as we...
Because we've seen it where, when you look at why some couples have separated, because one or both of them couldn't have children and they couldn't deal with it, and then they ended up fighting and turning on each other, and then the rift between them just got larger and larger and larger until, unfortunately, they ended up parting and ended up in separation and divorce. So we have seen it happen, and that pressure, and that's what I was mentioning earlier, the pressure that people put on them and other people put on you. Because I remember when I first got married, I would phone a relative, and his wife, the first thing, well, there's two things she would say to me, but one of the first things she would always say is, so are you pregnant yet? Are you pregnant yet? Are you pregnant yet? Every time I would call. And it got to the point where I thought to myself, I know she means no harm, but sometimes people really need to stop and be discerning and just think about what you're saying, and just know that because obviously at the time I didn't know about all the medical complications that I had. So at the beginning, it was just a case of it just wasn't happening, and I don't know why. We didn't know why. And I remember, because she's married to a family member, and I said, put him on the phone. I didn't even answer, I just said, put him on the phone. And she's like, what? And I said, put him on the phone. She put her husband on the phone, and I said to him, tell your wife, do not ever ask me that question again. Because it was just, because I'm calling to speak to this family member just to see how everything's doing. And by being asked that question, you've just reminded me of something that is a bit of a sore spot in my life. And it just got to the point where I just thought, if this woman asks me this question one more time, And so I thought, I don't want it to get there. So let me just say, stop. Okay. And that just makes you just feel under even more pressure, because people are always asking you, they're always waiting, they're always expecting. And you just want to say, leave my uterus alone, get out of my uterus, it's not your business. Just stop it, you know? So, and I have seen, unfortunately, where it's just driven couples apart. And one of the other things I wanted to speak to you about, because I was reading about your ministry in Shunem Care. Can you please tell us about Shunem Care and what made you feel that was something that you needed to do?
Okay. Like I've said before, personal wounds, the personal wound of being a minister that is childless and seeing my wife go through all that pain and wiping her tears and even wiping my own tears drove me to a point where I said, if I am to heal from this thing, I should step out there and look for somebody like me. Try to understand what they are going through. Listen to them. As I listen to them, listen to myself, and try to co-create meaning together. As we are co-creating meaning together, we get to a point where the two of us, that person who's going through that difficult time, and myself, can walk together out of the pit of pain to that height of happiness and helping each other. So I have my coming out in the open. I came out in the open on Facebook. That's when I really broke the silence on this. And this actually took the wind out of the rumor sails. And and those who wanted to talk, they actually spoke, and messages came streaming into my inbox, and those who knew me into my WhatsApp inbox, and I said, what have I done? I think I've done something terrible. I shouldn't have done this. I regretted having done that.
Wow.
But when those of my childless tribe hit my inbox, this becomes emotional. When they hit my inbox, I was touched. Deeply touched.
Yeah.
What I thought was a mistake isn't a mistake. If it just helps one person, then it can help the world.
Of course.
From there, began to have this community together, and we are actually helping each other, trying to understand. We share our burdens, we share our sorrows, and we can now even laugh about some of those things. And this is the ministry that the Lord has handed down to me. I didn't think, when I decided to become a pastor, I didn't know I would be ministering in this direction. But this is a ministry that I've accepted. And so I've called it Shunem Care because of the inspiration that is coming from this village in the Bible where there was a couple, and this couple really took care of the men of God. And in that, in their childlessness, I saw no fruitlessness.
Yeah. So, because they were wealthy.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
And for me, I don't think that was the only wealthy family in that place.
Of course not. Yes. Yes.
So many. But why this couple managed to do that kind of a thing? Because being childless is not being fruitless.
Mm-hmm.
You bear so many fruits.
I like that.
Being childless is not being mean. Childlessness is not meanness.
Mm.
No. The most sweetest people I have met when I started this ministry are childless people.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that is because of the journey and the pain and the struggle that they've gone through? It's allowed them to be people that are empathetic. It's allowed them to be people that are patient and understanding, because they know what as their level of pain is to desperately want something and know that you can't have it the way you thought you should be able.
And as opposed to what people say, I don't know in your setting, but from my cultural setting, woman doesn't have a child. This is a witch. Can't have a child. She must be mean, must be wicked, must be all those labels. So God is not giving this person a child because this person is so unkind, wicked, a witch, and all the evil W's that you can think about. But now,
in other cultures, it's a case of, oh, she's not having a child because she's selfless, she's selfish, she just wants to go for her career, she doesn't like children. And so people put those labels without even knowing. So, and it's interesting that in one culture she's a witch, she's mean, and in another culture she's selfish, she's just out for her career. And she, and you just like, actually, maybe a lot of these people, maybe some of these women, so there's some women that are like that. You have some mean women, you do. And then you do have some women that they just want to go after their career. But there are other women that maybe, just maybe, they have become cold and mean because there's been a dream that they have to be a mother, and they physically and medically cannot. And other women that throw themselves into their careers, because again, the dream of being a mother has not been realized, so they fill their time with that. And it's amazing that people just throw these labels without actually really understanding or knowing, and it's just like complete ignorance.
And you have actually say, when we throw all those labels, we are talking out of ignorance. We don't even know what the person is passing through, is going through, and we are saying this person is like this because they are like this. And tell you what, even those people that are deemed mean, they may not be. If we have time to dig deep into their lives, we may understand that they are not mean. Like for men, there is this broodiness that comes with not having a child. It's automatic. it has to take somebody to really help you to realize, or if it's a work of grace, to realize that, okay, this is just another chapter of your life. It's not your life.
It doesn't define me.
It doesn't define you. Mm-hmm. You are much bigger than, I mean, your life is much bigger than this. I mean,
yeah,
it's much bigger than, like when I broke into the public scene, some people said, we really didn't know that you are like that. I mean, we didn't know that you are childless. We didn't know. Because there are other things that I'm doing excellently. I mean, I'm not fruitless. I mean, there are things that I am able to do, and I don't do them mediocre. I do them to my very best. And so, being childless is not the end. It's just a small portion of my life.
Right. That is so, that's interesting. And that's good to know. Like you said, it's a small portion. It doesn't define you, and people shouldn't allow it to define them, because there's so much more in life and to life. And that is, and that is actually one of the keys. And I'm just so grateful for the ministry that you have, where you're breaking religious barriers, you're breaking cultural barriers, you're helping people to get past the stigma and the shame that society would want to put and label you with. So ministries like yours, Shunem Care, are so vital for so many people. When, because I can just imagine that you've got so many countries where it is the thing where if you don't have children, that's it, you're an outcast, you're a pariah, there's something wrong with you. And rather than taking that time to be compassionate, to find out maybe they want to, just but they cannot. And and if we're honest, as much as you want something, it's not necessarily your destiny to have that thing.
precisely so. So having that what you've just said, if you want something, it's not your destiny to have it. So I took time to redefine what fatherhood is to me.
Okay.
Fatherhood is more than having a child. For me, fatherhood is having broad shoulders that are wide enough to carry all those who have burdens. This is my definition of fatherhood.
Yeah. That it goes deeper. It goes deeper, yes. That is so true, because you have so many people that do have children, and once the child reaches into adulthood, they say that, oh, my father wasn't a real father to me. My father figure was somebody else. And the same with women. They say my mother figure was somebody else. So it's, and I think people need to realize that there's a lot of people that do not and have not biologically had children that are mothers and fathers to so many.
True. I can relate to that. I can relate to that, because if I, from my definition of fatherhood, there are people who sit in my office, they have their own fathers, they have their own mothers, but they come to this person who doesn't have a child.
Mm-hmm.
And help me understand how to deal with issues of life. I am growing up.
Yeah.
I've been given children to mentor and by parents. They've given me children to mentor. And I'm saying, I don't have a parenting, experience.
Mm-hmm.
But what I have come to realize is that I have been parented. My experience of parenting is from the fact that I was parented at one time.
Okay, right. Yeah. And that's really what your ministry is. And I say again, turning your pain into purpose.
Precisely so.
Gumbuzo, what is next for you on this journey?
Okay. If I drop dead before having written it loudly and clearly that marriage is complete without children, It is love that cements it, I would have failed. And so, to get this done, it is one thing that I want to do. I'm working on a book. Besides blogging, I'm working on a book that really talks about this from a perspective of being a pastor, from a perspective of being an African, and from a perspective of being a man.
Right.
Talking about this. So this is the next phase of the journey. So speaking about it is fine, but I think I need to immortalize the thoughts that I have about it and share it in book format. So this is what is coming next.
I'm forward to it. I'm excited to be able to read it. So please, we must have you to come back on when the book is actually out and published so you can tell all of our listeners about your book. So that's any idea? Do you think that may be coming in the next, by 2021, you think, or beyond? Are you not sure?
Well, 2021, okay, we as a community, the Shunem Care community, we will come together. This year, we wanted to come together. I mean, not virtually, because virtually is okay, but we want to come together and have that out in a retreat where we share. Because in our community, we have even people that have been divorced, because this side of the world, I mean, like in other parts of the world, but this side of the world, this is the in thing to say, if she doesn't have a child, let her go. So we are also taking care of those people, and we are providing ministry to such that have been divorced because they don't have children. So we want to come together and really help each other in that regard. Some resort place, and we really wanted to do that this year, but COVID came and
had other plans. And so where can people find you? Are you on social media, or how can people find you?
On social media, on Twitter, my Twitter handle, okay, is, oh, by the way, the name is a problem. Maybe I need to spell it. Everything lowercase, SKHUMBUZO, then DUBE. That is my Twitter handle. That's my Twitter handle. One more time, SKHUMBUZO DUBE, right? It's my name with an I removed, but everything is lowercase. So they can find me there. And then on Facebook, I have my page, Shunem Care. It's there. They can find me there. Facebook. Now my where I blog, shunemcare.home.blog. That is where I do my blogging. That's where they can find me.
Yes. Right.
Yes.
Gumbuzo Dube.
Yes.
I thank you so much for being a guest with me today and for really sharing your story and being so open, honest, and transparent. I appreciate it. I appreciate you. And just blessings to you with your ministry and the work that you're doing. And I know that for you, your wish is for men and women in childless marriages to take the opportunity to bond closer together. And that is so key, that people really turn their pain into purpose. So, Gumbuzo Zube, I thank you so much.
Thank you. You are welcome. Thank you. I feel honored that somebody can hunt you down, and get you.
I'm relentless.
When somebody can hunt you down and get you and say, okay, let's talk about this. It is an honor. The first time I broke into public, I didn't know it was going to get to this. But I am grateful I did that. I am grateful that I clicked the share button. Clicking the share button wasn't anything, but I look back to today and I say, had I not done that, what would happen to people that really needed care? And so I want to thank you for really allowing me to share my story. It is my greatest pleasure to.
Thank you.
This very wonderful conversation with Alison.
I thank you so much. And it really is an honor and a privilege to be able to speak to you and to hear your journey and your story. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you for spending time with us. We're already looking forward to the next episode of This is Conversations with Alison J. The journey to here. Until next time, honor, respect, and blessings to you all. If you want to connect, visit alisonj.net. That's AlisonJaye.net. Alison with one L, as she is the one and only.